I guess we'll get started. Our first talk is going to be Ryan Gilry. I hope I pronounced that right. Talking about cross resistance and fall armyworm.
Good afternoon. My name is Ryan Gilry. I'm a master's student at Texas A&M University under Dr. David Kearns. For my master's project, I'm looking at the cross-crop resistance to corn and cotton in a VIP3A resistant strain of fall armyworm, Spodoptera frugiperda. So a little background on this pest. As many of us know, it is a major pest to many agronomic crops. It has been reported to infest greater than 80 host species and is a major target pest to both BT corn and cotton. It causes severe injury to both of these plants. In corn, it feeds down on the whorl of the plant, damaging the leaves, and has been reported to be found also on the ears of corn. When looking at cotton, it can feed on the leaves, but it does primarily feed on the fruiting structures like the bolls, squares, and blooms. To manage this pest, the past years we've really relied heavily on the BT technologies, starting with our first generation of Cry1 proteins, coming out with Cry1F, and then Cry1AB and Cry1AC. I would like to point out that the last two are ineffective for the control of fall armyworms. And then we also have a field-evolved resistance to Cry1F documented down in Brazil, Puerto Rico, and southeastern parts of the U.S., Cry2AB2 is our next one that came along, and it's been used for a number of years in many products, and has really been heavily relied upon because of this resistance to Cry1F. And so the future use of the Cry2 proteins could face many challenges because of the resistance built up to Cry1F. And we've seen, too, a documented case that Cry1F-resistant worms have been selected for Cry2 resistance in a laboratory settings. So this kind of puts a lot of emphasis on wanting to preserve our newest technology of VIP3A to further preserve the BT technologies themselves. So luckily for us, the VIP3A does have a different mode of action when compared to the other cry proteins, and it is incorporated in most of our new hybrids and varieties. And it's not only effective for armyworms, but it's also effective for bollworms, so it does control multiple species in both crops. So it kind of leads us into some of our objectives. So we wanted to determine our cross-crop resistance between corn and cotton with the strain of the VIP3A resistant fall armyworms. And in order to do this, we used corn and cotton leaf bioassays to determine the cross-crop resistance of corn BT technologies to cotton BT technologies using a VIP3A resistant, susceptible, and heterozygote fall armyworm. And we also wanted to determine if the pyramided BT technologies containing the Cry1 or Cry2 proteins are actually able to control and manage the VIP3A resistant fall armyworm. So some of the seeds that we used for corn, we used Herculex, SmartStax, VT Double Pro, AgriSure, VipTerra 3111, Leptra, and 3 non-BTs. I would like to point out that the 3 non-BTs showed no differences in susceptibility or survivorship, and so we pulled them together for the data. And then the cotton, we use Wide Strike 3, Bolgard 2, Bolgard 3, Twin Link Plus, and then a non-BT as well on that one. And I would like to point out that all of these are the all available commercial products that are on the market currently. Looking at the insects that we used, so for our resistant population, it was collected off of Bolgard 2 cotton out of Rapides, Paris, Louisiana. It was then derived off of an F2 screen that Yang et al. Described in 2017. Our susceptible population was collected off near Weslaco, Texas, off of non-BT corn. It has been documented to be susceptible to Cry1F, Cry1A105, Cry2AB2, Cry2AE, and VIP3A. And then we had an RS that was created by crossing the RR and the SS. The crosses were an SS male or SS female with the RR male, and then the RR female with an SS male. And there was no differences in susceptibility to the reciprocal reciprocal crosses, so the resulting progeny were then pulled and then randomly used throughout the assays. So all of our corn and cotton was planted in a greenhouse. Once the corn reached the V5 to V7 growth stage and the cotton reached 7 to 8 nodes, the leaves were then excised and brought back to the lab and washed and prepared. They were placed into petri dishes. It was lined with moistened filter paper. Once they were in the petri dish, 5 neonates that were less than 24 hours old were then placed on the leaf surface. A lid was placed on them, and they were placed in the growth chamber. They remained in the growth chamber for 7 days, and after the 7 days was up, mortality and the development data was then collected. For the design, it was a randomized complete block that was replicated 4 times per variety, per genotype. Then larval survivorship was analyzed using a two-way ANOVA. Survivorship was calculated as a percentage, which was 100 times the number of surviving larvae divided by the total number of insects assayed. The means were then separated using two keys method of differences of least squared means with an alpha of 0.05. So getting into our data, so you can see the percent survival on the y-axis for corn, and then the technology down there across the bottom. When we look at the non-BTs, we did have high survivorship across all three genotypes. And then when we moved to VIP3, which is the AgriSure VIPTERA 3111, it does only contain the CRY1AB and the VIP3 gene. So we do know that the CRY1AB, is not effective for the control of fall armyworm. So it acts as a positive control for us. And as you can see, our RR in the maroon shows no differences on the VIP3 versus the non-BTs. However, the other two genotypes, as you can see, had no survivorship. Moving on, looking at Herculex, which is just CRY1F corn, you can see that the RRs did have some moderate survivorship, which is kind of suggesting that there's probably some moderate resistance built up in this genotype. And the other two did have some survivorship, but nothing different than the other technologies coming forward when the CRY1 and CRY2 proteins are introduced in the double VT Double Pro and Smart Stacks. You can see that no survivorship was there. And then looking at Leptrum, which was CRY1AB, which we know is ineffective for the control, and then CRY1F, which we know is not very effective, and the VIP3. So really the only one that we had controlling there for the RR worms would be the CRY1F, and you can see we do have the moderate resistance in that genotype. Moving on, looking at the development of the surviving larvae, with the instar over here on this right side on the y-axis, and again the technology across the bottom for both of them, you can see that the non-BTs did develop well. They got up to that fourth instar range. And moving on to the VIP3, you can see that they didn't quite develop as well. You can see that there is a statistical difference kind of suggesting that they're made the resistance is incomplete on the RR. And then again, when the other technology is introduced, you can see that they really inhibited the development of the larvae. Looking at the other side of the graph is our weights. Again, non-BT did really well, had high survivorship, as we saw before, and developed really well. But as soon as any kind of technology was stacked in there or introduced to these insects, development was really delayed, and you can see that with the weights. So looking at our cotton, again, with our survivorship on the y-axis, again, with the non-BTs, we had well over 80% survivorship of all three genotypes. But as soon as you introduce the CRY1 or CRY2 proteins, as you can see on the bottom, survivorship is really low. And it reiterates the same point that we're getting good control with the pyramided proteins. Moving on, looking at the development on the cotton, again, with the same setup with the instar on the right-hand side, you can see that the non-BTs did perform well, and they did develop well, as you would expect. But then again, as soon as you get any other proteins introduced in there, that really delays and just they do not develop very well on it. Again, on the weights over there, really showing the same point. I would like to point out on the non-BTs, you can see the weights are different from corn, which can be expected since they do prefer corn over cotton. So this is just normal data. And again, really didn't develop well looking at the other proteins that when they were introduced. Just kind of wrap some stuff up, some of our conclusions that we came to. So the RR did have high survivorship on CRY1AB and VIP3A corn and showed no differences when compared back to the non-BT. I would like to reiterate the point that we do know that CRY1AB is an effective to fall armyworms based on other observations. RS and SS both had low survivorship on the VIP3A gene, on the VIP3A protein, and so this is suggesting that the RR or the resistance mechanism is a recessive gene. RS and SS both perform similarly on all the BT corn and cotton varieties and hybrids with low survivorship on all of them. RR did not develop, as we saw before, on the VIP3A versus the non-BT, which is suggesting, again, that incomplete resistance And this is going to be the focus of our future studies as we carry forward into the future. But as I showed and mentioned before, the pyramid of technologies, once we introduced that Cry1 or Cry2 protein, we did have good management and control of the VIP3A resistant falling worms, and it negated that resistant mechanism, which is suggesting that we still do have the capabilities of managing the VIP3A resistant falling worms. With that, I would like to acknowledge my major professor, Dr. David Kearns, Dr. Fei Yang, for all the help that he's done and helped me on this project, my lab mates and the other student workers for making all this possible. And with that, I'll take any questions. He asked what the resistant population was originally selected from, or selected for. It was selected off of Bolgar 2 cotton, and then we did select for the VIP resistance on the F2 screen in the lab. How long did the bioassays run? For 7 days. So the leaves were changed as necessary. So if they were really curled up or eaten, like non-BT, just got demolished. So whenever they were, every 2 days or so, I'd check them, and I'd have to replace whenever I needed to. And then the moisture was controlled by actually taking them, like re-wetting all the moisture paper at the bottom. So like every day I'd have to go in and re-moisten everything or replace leaves. And then when I'd pull the leaves out, I'd replace them, and then I'd put the larvae back on and then place them back in the growth chamber.